Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals.
Welcome to Sports Day here on this Wednesday. It's hump day, everyone. Hope you've had a good day at work. If you're winging your way home, drive safe. Don't use your phones. Don't even touch those phones. if you've been doing that, it's a dumb idea, everyone. You would have learned that by now. $1,000, hey? So if you're looking at your phone pretty much these days, so do the right thing. We want you to call in if you can. So please, if you've got hands free, call through on 922-11882. Lots of things to talk about, but Hayes, we need the AFL season to start sooner rather than later because everyone's breaking down.
We do, Carl. There's all this talk about players getting injured in the big All-Stars game, but it is happening every day. And the reason it is happening is because of the fierce nature of training. There's a lot of match play going on right now. Jack Darling was a casualty. He's out with a small cheekbone fracture. He'll be okay. He'll be fine by round one. Don't worry about that. Anthony Miles from the Gold Coast Suns, pectoral injury, Carl. He was doing bench press. We've all been there. He snapped his pec, so he'll be out for a period of time. Anthony McDonald, Tippin, Woody, minor calf strain. The Bombers not looking good. That is good for the Fremantle Dockers who take them on in round one. And Lin Jong, he's one of my favourite players that we haven't seen the best of because he keeps getting big injuries. Another high-grade hamstring that's shattering for him. 10 to 12 weeks he's likely to miss. And also in cricket, Glenn Maxwell, he's been replaced by Darcy Short on the South African tour. He's got elbow injury, had surgery on that elbow. And unfortunately, Matt Renshaw has taken an indefinite leave from cricket. The Queenslander played for Australia only 2 years ago. He needs some time off. Let's hope he's okay and gets back because he was pretty good through the Big Bash.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got so much coming your way tonight. We will touch base with Adam Voges. He will regularly be back on a Wednesday night. David Campese, what a legend.
Oh, Campese!
It's like Chianese, you calling goals. You're doing a bit of a hilly there right now, Hayes. But look, David Campese, the number of tries that he called. Look, we had some disappointing news when we heard that Rugby Union won't be broadcast or they'd lost their broadcast partner. David Campese now an ambassador. So I'd be interested to find out exactly what role that he is going to play there. The West Australian Sports Star of the Year Awards, Hayes, are tomorrow night here at Optus Stadium, where we're sitting at right now. And this is a very prestigious award, and it's been won by some greats over the years. And Sam Kerr is the defending champion, and she won it for the second time in a row last year because she's one of very few multiple winners of the award. Hockey champion Mona Pierce won the first award, which was conducted, Hayes, back in 1956. And then, of course, some great sporting idols here in WA, Herb Elliott, Shirley Strickland, Dennis Lilly, Rick Charlesworth, Rochelle Hawkes, who will be our Real Value local on Sports Day tomorrow night as we talk about her career and the Olympic Games, Ryan Bailey, cyclist Lauren Mitchell. And they've all been recognised. And now it is time to salute another champion from Western Australia that have punched above their weight in producing sporting champions over the years. Now, I must say, it's a crack field, Hayes.
And go through their names.
Well, after seven tonight, we're going to do a bit of a whip around the country because Madison Keeney right now is perched over on the East Coast in Brizzy. Matty Wearns in Melbourne contesting some world championships, and Sammy Welsford is in Adelaide. So they will not be present for the RAC Sports West of the Year Awards. But Madison De Rosario, Nathan Fyfe, Bryce Cotton, Madison Keeney, who I spoke about, Diego Castro, Sam Kerr, Hannah Green has had a brilliant year on the golf course, Sam Hill, mountain biker, Annabelle McIntyre in rowing, Matthew Wearn, sailor, Brianna Throssell in swimming, and Sam Welsford in track sailing.
Oh, crack field, Carl. Now, have you been on the panel with this award
yes,
in the past?
Yes.
Were you on the panel this year?
No.
No. How difficult is it to try and line up all the different sports? You've got AFL played only here in Australia. You've got some sports that have more popularity, played by more countries as well. Very difficult for the judges, no doubt about that. But looking at it, we want to know, or listening, who do you think should win the West Australian RAC Sports Star of the Year Award? Is it a Nathan Fyfe who's won the Brownlow Medal? Have the Brownlow medalists always won this award in the past?
Not always, I don't think. But look, I'd have to have a look back through history. I know that Ben Cousins definitely won one. I think that Nathan Fyfe has won one previously when he won his Brownlow Medal. But 922-1882, who do you expect to win the West Australian Sports Star of the Year award on the back of the nominees that are in to win it? It is something that is valued very highly. And I know that from my perspective, Hayes, I've been in the position of picking the 882-6PR person of the year who has potential, one that's going to go forward and do it. Now, Daniel Ricciardo, Eamon Sullivan are a couple of past winners of that particular award. So we've got a pretty good track record in selecting someone who's going to go up and do it, and we'll pick pretty much that out of one of the juniors that have been strutting their stuff on the world stage and here in Australia in the last 12 months.
And we want your opinions on the coach of the year, the nominees. Trevor Gleeson, we know from the Wildcats. Justin Lang has done a terrific job with the Australian team. And Richie Smith, the golfing coach, he's got so many athletes that he coaches that are doing very well inside the top 100. And the Channel 7 Perth team of the year, the WA Football State Under-18s, coached by Peter Sumich. They certainly took out that title, the Perth Wildcats and the Perth Glory. Just going back to the coach of the year, Carl, out of those three, Gleeson, Langer and Richie Smith, who would you be selecting?
Oh, God. Well, it's hard, isn't it? I mean, Richie Smith and what he's done with golf. I mean, when you look at Minwoo Lee, who we spoke to on our program last night, and, you know, Minji Lee,
Anna Green,
Madison Tolchard, who is in to win, I think, the Junior Sports Star of the Year. When you look at that list with Clark and Zoya and Robertson, Copeland and Enrique's in there as well. So that's another golfer that comes out of the Richie Smith camp. Justin Langer and what he's done for Australian cricket, and Trevor Gleeson, what he's continued to do and continue the legacy with the Perth Wildcats, and they won the championship last year. It's pretty tough to toss. I'd like to throw it open to the audience and invite you to call through on 922-1882. Simon Black is another one who we spoke to in our segment for Real Value Locals last week here on Sports Day. Certify that your products are Australian made with the Australian made logo, and we'd love to have your calls on 922-1882 about that. The other thing is, Hayes, the waffle budget. Now, Tonic Media have been producing the waffle budget, have pulled out. Now, I've had a chat to the West Australian Footy Commission today, and it is likely that they will continue to produce it in-house, right? In an A5 format, and hopefully production, layout, articles, and all those things that we've grown up loving when you've gone along to the West Australian Football League. But I just wonder, how much love is there for the budget at the Waffle Footy? 922-1882. Do you get into the digital format, or do you still like a paper copy when you go into the match? Because I can tell you, Hayes, I've been down at the Perth Motorplex for a fair while now, and probably about 3 years ago, I reckon it was now, maybe four, time goes pretty quick, they did away with the program. Because
they digitize it?
It's digital, yeah. So you go online and you can get all of the entrance, and you can read the articles. You go to motorplex.com.au, you can read all there. So, and then you get one piece of paper when you walk in the door, and that just has a program of events and a timeline. And rarely are we ever on time anyway down there. Sometimes we start off on time, but then there's a prang, and it, God help us, you know, everything goes out the window. But with the waffle budget, mate, it has a long, long, long history with West Australian footy. And, you know, there's some chance that it might not happen, but there is every possibility that it will continue with the West Australian Football Commission taking control of it. But it's been a little bit of an institution, I reckon.
It has. I love it. I think for those that want to go along to the footy and get to know not only the league squad, and I don't think the league players are as well known right now as they have been in the past when, well, before the AFL came in, but your Colts and your reserves, particularly with recruiters, there might be somebody that comes from nowhere with us. They just have to know the number and name of that player going forward. So I think it's important. The articles are fantastic, but it is another sign of the Waffle doing it pretty tough, unfortunately, with the growth of the women's game. I believe now it's on the third tier here in Western Australia behind the AFL and the AFLW and then the Waffle. So they're going to have more challenges along the way, and this is one, but I like the idea that they're going to keep it.
Well, I like the idea that they're going to keep it too, but do you think it's time to do away with the Waffle budget? 922-1882. Would you care if it wasn't produced going forward? 922-1882. Muzza joins us. G'day.
Boys, Most definitely, yes. Keep the budget. A lot of people go to the footy, like, as you know, boys, I go to the Waffle regular and watch the demos, and a lot of people do get the budget like it. And we don't all have computer facilities to print this thing off, but it's great. Take it home, have a read of it, look at it later, and keep it mementos. I've still got some of the Football League budgets in my drawer from many years ago. I think it's a great thing. They should keep it. Yep.
You're a big Perth fan. What did you make of the change of logo and the branding down there at the Perth Football Club? Because all clubs are going through this process of upgrading a little.
I haven't seen it yet, Hayes, but I'll be intrigued to have a look at it in the next few days or a couple of weeks when I go past there again.
You'll get on their website, go and check it out.
You're pretty tech-savvy, right?
Mars? Oh, I am, yes,
you're pretty tech-savvy. Now, what if, like, and most people have got mobile phones in the world today, what if you went along to the footy and you take, say, your mobile phone or an iPad, and you've got plenty of versions of those these days, and everything is all there. You can get your Waffle Live, your stats come up of all the players live at the ground. Like, I can log into the Waffle website now. I can get information across all the four games as they're happening. I can see them because there's statisticians at the games that are punching all this information in. I can do that on my device, as I can with the AFL. Now, is it not something that people will probably essentially do? I know there's probably a fair few older people that are listening to our program now that maybe aren't up with the technological world in the way that they'd like, and it's too much for them and it does their head in, and so the old paper copy is the way that they do it. But there's a hell of a lot more online. You can still write the same articles. You can still read them. You can still read them on your device at the grounds. Do you not think that that might be the way to go?
Well, possibly, Carl, but I tell you what, mate, one of the best things about the budget is you've got your memorabilia page, and I love that bit. Looking at old logos and stuff in the past, memorabilia that people have, you can look at it on the day and later on, like, but people just don't bother going online at times, haven't got time. Get it on the day, look at it, great, mate. I think they should keep it, and good on the commission if they do keep it, eh?
Righto, Muz, good on you. Let's go to Des, who joined us. G'day, Des.
Hey, back in the 70s, when I first came over here, I used to work for a firm called H. Roach and Son, and I used to bind those volumes into books for the Waffle. Back in those days, I was in the printing trade, and it was my job to bind them up and put them into volumes and send them in. Now, apart from that, Sam Kerr, she has to be our sports person of the year.
Righto. Well, if she does it again, I think that'll be 3 years in a row for Sam Kerr. Trifecta.
They've just announced the BBC Sport. We're pleased to announce the nominees for the BBC Women's Football of the Year in 2020. Lucy Bronze, Julia Ertz, Vivian Miedema, Megan Rapinoe, the American, and our Sam Kerr. So she's inside the top five. Many believe she's inside the top three. Many in this state think she's the best. I think she's inside the top three. I'd love to see her really dominate over there in the Premier League as well. But good call. She has to be a real chance, no doubt. Sam Kerr.
Righto. More of your calls in a moment. 922-1882 is our number. Jason McCartney is going to join us here on Sports Day in the not-too-distant future. But if you'd like to tell us who you think is going to win the West Australian Sports Star of the Year, or would you care if they didn't produce the West Australian Football League budget, ending what has been a very, very long history in West Australian sport. 922-1182 is the number. Welcome back to Sports Day. Carling and Paul Hazelby with you. Our number is 922-1182 if you'd like to talk about anything in sport. Just some other sports results. New York Tennis Open. Jordan Thompson has started 2020 in fine fettle. He beat Ivo Karlovic in the round of 32. Now to the round of 16. He plays the number one seed for this tournament in John Isner, the American. So it'd be nice if he can roll him. And Ila Tomljanovic had a win too at St. Petersburg in the Ladies Trophy against Martika Vondorosa, and now will play a Russian qualifier by the name of Anastasia Potapova, Hayes.
And the Australian women's team defeated India by 11 runs today. They were cruising India, 3 for 115. They were all out for 144. And Jess Johnson, she was the destroyer, 5 for 12. Beth Mooney, 71, player of the series. But it wasn't easy throughout this tournament, Carl. We struggled against England. We lost a game to India and lucky to get away with the final. Heading towards this T20 World Cup coming up, where they've got Katy Perry and they're trying to get 100,000 goes at the MCG. They need to get there, but right now not as convincing as they were 12 months ago.
NRL 9's this weekend here in Perth. They will get a guest on tomorrow night to have a yak about that. HBF Park, Friday and Saturday. 30 matches in 12 hours. NRL.com/9s for the draw. Four pools, four teams, Hayes. And it's going to be interesting to see how many West Australians get along and support this. Nine players a side, 9 minutes per half, unlimited interchange, five tackles per set rather than six. Sin bins is 3 minutes rather than 10, so if you do something naughty. Conversions are drop kicks with a 25-second shot clock. There's 40-20 kick-arounds introduced, as well as 40-by-20s. 5 points rather than four awarded for a try scored in the bonus zone between the goalpost and drawn matches decided by a golden try. So they are the rules that you can have a look at the website, and you can tell us whether you are heading along to have a look at that over the course of the weekend at HBF Stadium. As we go back to the phone, Stephen Meyer rejoins us. G'day, Steve.
Yeah, g'day, Carl. G'day, Hayes. How are you?
Good.
Good, good. Yeah, on those 2 points, yeah, you can't beat the budget. I mean, there's nothing like not planning it, rocking up to the waffle, folding it, putting it in your back pocket, and when you want to refer to it, there it is. You know, it's awesome.
Good. All right. Sports Star of the Year, yeah. What do you reckon?
Look, the tricky one is, I mean, I'd say Sam Kerr, but the thing is, I mean, she's going to be at the top of her game for the next 5 or 6 years. And if she's in the top five players in the world, how does anyone else get a look in?
Well, I think that if you... Well, I'll tell you how, because you've got someone like a Hannah Green, who is currently working her way up the rankings list when it comes to world golf. So if you win tournaments of that nature, you've got to understand that Australian rules is only played in Australia. So basically, if you're the best in Australia, you're the best in the world, Steve.
I suppose that's one way of looking at it.
I'm just throwing it out there. And when you look at blokes like Sam Welsford, I mean, you know, cycling is a sport that is done in so many countries. He's a gold medalist in two events, most recently at the World Championships. And, you know, there's many of the others that are in this field. I mean, you look at Bryce Cotton and what he's doing in basketball.
But they're a long way off of being the best in the world, aren't they? Bryce Cotton and also Diego Castro, the other one who had a fantastic career over there in Europe. Yeah. But when you talk about a world scale, they're miles from it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Look, I hope you're right, Carl. I hope they do come up, because that will, you know, create a bit of competition. But, yeah, I mean, what do? Do you give it to someone that's, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years in a row because they're at the top of their game worldwide? I mean, that would be a shame, to be honest.
Yeah, well, Sam Kerr hasn't not won it in the last 2 years, mate, because she hasn't been at the top of her game. And not only has she been at the top of her game in Australia, she's been in top of her game for our national team. And I think that's what's really important here, is that we look at what they've done individually within their own sports, and then we have a look at what they've done on the international stage. So that is from a judging criteria. When I've been part of the judging panel, which I didn't this year, I was unavailable on the day that they did the selection process for this, but I have been involved in the past, and I tell you what, it is damn hard to try and measure them all up, and all of them would be worthy winners. It's a crack field, and it'll be great to have a chat to a few of them after 7 o'clock tonight. 922-1882 is the number. We need to clear a commitment on the other side. We'll come back, and we're heading to Sydney. Gee, we'll tell you what, we're going around every state in Australia tonight. Jason McCartney is going to join us. It's Kia's open season. Match-winning deals in Australia's best 7-year warranty right across the range. Of course, Jason is at the Greater Western Sydney Giants. Nice to have your company here on Sports Day. Crown Perth Sports Update this summer. Live a little larger at Crown. We've been getting around our AFL clubs. And from list manager to footy manager, Jason McCartney joins us on Sports Day of the Greater Western Sydney Giants. Welcome, Jace. How are you, mate?
Good, Carl. Hey, how are you going?
Yeah, nice to chat to you. Well, how's the new job going?
Yeah, look, it's been really good. Obviously, we're well placed after what we've put out on the park the last couple of years, and yeah, really exciting to take up the challenge and move from the list management role into the GM of footy role.
Now, how much does the football manager have to say in the list management, given that you've just stepped out of that role, eh?
Yeah, look, everyone shapes up a little bit differently in that list management space, and part of my role and responsibility will be to continue on in that capacity. Probably not too dissimilar. Hawthorn do it in a similar fashion with Graham Wright, who's the GM of football, having, I suppose, Wrighty filled that list management role for 8 or 10 years and myself doing it for 8 years. So we'll continue on that vein and just structure up a little bit differently.
You've done a very good job, because I reckon it's the toughest job in footy with all those poachers out there trying to get your talent, but you've still got a few to lock away. Jeremy Cameron this year is a free agent, and Zach Williams the other one that clubs feel they could get close to him. How are you situated with both those players?
Yeah, look, it's a good question, Hayes. We have it every year. I've already read the articles about those players, and we're pretty accustomed to that, the discussion. As soon as we sign one, the focus is that's great that they move on to another one. So that's our lot. We accept that and we work closely. We're comfortable where the discussions are at. The players are really invested. They're training well and things like that, but we don't know the time frame of these things. Some you sign quicker than others. Some, as with Stephen Keneally last year, take a little bit longer. But we're always confident by the dialogue we're having and the conversations with management and players. But until they sign on the dotted line, you're never quite sure.
Hey, Jay, so different to when you and I played, where loyalty and club loyalty was something that existed and you tended to stay and play and you weren't pushed out the door so quick. But there's so much more movement in the game these days. I know the players wanted it, and the long-term contracts that you have to hand out, and sometimes ahead of their time.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Like the player movement's very fluid now, and it's changed a lot. But we've got a proven track record and ability to retain high end talent. Obviously, we do have to trade players out. There's a thing called the salary cap, which means we're forced to do that. Long term contracts, yes, probably off the back of free agency. That's something all clubs and we in particular need to go down that path, I suppose, when 95% of our talent has had to move. Yes, we've got academy boys are from country New South Wales, but we've only got 3 boys on our list are actually from Sydney. So you're confronted with that all the time, but that's all part and parcel.
Jace, the grand final was a horror show, let's be honest, last year. How did the coach, Cameron...
It was. I'm not going to shy away from that.
How did he address it?
We let the day down, didn't we? How we addressed it? It was addressed, initially straight after. When we come back, we've touched on it, done a little bit. But I think the great thing around it is its actions speak louder than words. And the way the players have presented pre-season, the way they've gone about it, the condition they're in at the moment, that says to me and our coaching staff and others that we're in really good shape. So we're extremely proud of what the group was able to achieve last year to get into that position. But us, like the players, are really bitterly disappointed in what we put out on Grand Final Day. And Richmond were far too good.
You like to poach a lot of our West Aussies. You've got a lot of youngsters there. Sam Taylor, how's his development going? I think he can become an absolute star this year. And the fitness of Zach Langdon, another one we didn't see too much of last year.
Yeah, I'll start. Sam's been a terrific acquisition. Look, he's playing a key position ahead of his time and what he's churning out for us. So, really, he's going into his third season. But like those guys, really, it's only his second full pre-season. So we're looking forward to him just continuing on in that positive vein he's shown. Zach Langdon, Zach obviously really had a big impact first year at the club. Unfortunately, the injuries they got him last year, but he's in really good nick pre-season. So we expect he's pretty determined to jump back up and reclaim one of those small forward spots. And Bobby Hill, Bobby came in last year and a breath of fresh air and great excitement. Obviously now he's getting a taste of what a full pre-season's like, and that can only hold him in good stead as well.
How keen are you to go to LA?
LA, that's something that's initiative of the club and working closely with the AFL. And look, it's exciting, but we don't shy away from the fact that our heartland and playing games at Giants Stadium and our partnership in Canberra, that's first and foremost. But the opportunity to expand and grow our brand, and we've got connections over in the US through some of our high coterie network groups. So, yeah, that'll work away in the background, and if that comes off, that's only another positive for the club and growing our Giants brand globally.
So was that an approach made by you to the AFL, or did the AFL come to you?
No, that's us with the AFL. We sort of pride ourselves on being like a club like no other. We do have to attack things differently. We've done that, and it's given us a really strong foundation, both commercially, our membership base, although it's nowhere near the level of the established clubs. What we've been able to hit targets in 8 years, So we need to keep looking outside the box, but can never, ever take our eye off the ball. And that's our bread and butter and our fundamentals, which is out playing in the West, out at Giant Stadium, like I said. And obviously, our partnership in Canberra has been phenomenal. So that's really important to keep growing that while looking at other little opportunities to add to our brand.
Hey, Jace, I argue with Carl Langdon most nights about the viability of the Gold Coast Suns and the Giants, and you've been at the club for 3 years now. Are you winning? Yeah. Do you feel like you're getting the momentum in terms of corporate support, in crowd numbers and memberships, that you are having a win?
Yeah, we're getting there. We are getting there, there's no doubt about it. When you look at most metrics and you take away comparing them to the AFL market, if we base it on the Sydney market where we're based, obviously, our membership tipped over 30,000 last year. So if you put that in context in a Sydney market, that's second to the Swans. So it's ahead of all the opposing codes that we compete with. So, yeah, like I said, commercially, our revenue streams are strong there. So we're only 8 years old. Obviously, it takes time, but we're obviously proud of what we've been able to achieve over probably a four-year period on with building it from the right foundation. We're obviously the only side that's won finals consecutively over a four-year period too. So in saying all that, we've still got a bit of work to do to bridge the gap on field, but we've got a really strong foundation, and that's been set up by the foundation, Graham Allen and Dave Matthews, the CEO, and Stephen Silvani and others that were involved in day dot with either the list build or the build of the football department.
Yeah, I'd have to throw Kevin Sheedy's name in amongst that. We might be having a chat to Sheeds tomorrow night here on Sports Day. Now, I've got to ask you about the girls' game on the weekend. Pretty tough conditions, low-scoring contest.
It was tough conditions. I've not seen constant rain like we had over the weekend. It just did not let up. It was unbelievable. And it was a great effort. The girls got out there and they played in it. The positives, Carl and Paul, we kept the opposition to one goal. What a fantastic effort. The fact is we only scored one as well. But it was unbelievably tough conditions. So, it's also the first time we've in 4 years. Obviously, we've been in the comp in AFLW. It's the first time we've won round one. So plenty of positives to take out of that. We've got a really tough challenge this weekend in Launceston playing against the Kangaroos. So it's going to be a big one for the girls.
Got to find the positives in everything. Now, I don't expect you to give me the names, but you can if you want. Have you had further discussions about the three players that will be playing from your club with the AFL in the All-Stars game?
No, we haven't. We expect to hear back from the AFL tomorrow or the day after. Just I don't envy John Longmire and Damien Hardwick. Obviously, the number of players is a bit undecided. They'll be playing for the club. Initially, we thought it would probably be 3 to 4, but I'm not sure how that's going to work out, because if I'm Hardwick, I'm sitting there thinking, well, if Longmire wants to play two of Giant players in the Allies side, I'm not sure Hardwick's going to be happy sitting there going, well, I can only choose one of Whitfield, Cameron or Kelly. So good luck to those two boys sorting that out. But we'll hear more in the next part.
Good on you, mate. Thanks,
our boys. I must say on that note, though, our boys are unbelievably excited at the opportunity. The cause that it's going to support, and B, state of origin again in some form or another. They're really keen to get out and play. So I think it's a great thing.
Mate, we should be playing every year, because if you don't win a grand final, you can still go and play for your state and still maybe win something. But anyway, that's something we can continue to talk about here. Thanks for your time, Jace. Really appreciate it.
Excellent, guys. Take care. Good chat.
Jason McCartney there, and this summer Crown is the only destination where things are bigger, brighter and more fun. What do you reckon? 922-1182, should they just limit the number of players that can play from each club to three? Or do you deserve to play if you're good enough and you want to play and your club's willing to let you play? Should you be allowed to be involved in the State of Origin footy, the Allies against the All-Stars?
I think you should have a choice, Carl, if you're the player. If you want to go over more than three per club, I think it should be up to the the individual. I know they brought it in originally so they could make sure it's fair on everybody, and if there were injuries, it was a equal playing ground. But I just think get the very best. That's what's going to make it work, and if we do have a future, it will only work with the very best.
Well, Jason McCartney sounded open to it. What do you think? 922-182 is the number. You can join us next here on Sport. Debbie Company here on Sports Day. Well, only a couple have rung up about the waffle budget and its future. I'd like to hear from you if you care or not. 922-182, or do we just go to a digital format and roll that out? So you get an SMS, you get all the news, the info comes to your phone, your device, and you can just read it there. 922-182 is the number. We've got the Sheffield Shield side. Adam Voges will join us after 7 tonight. Sean Marsh, Cam Bancroft, Jake Carter, Cam Green, Liam Guthrie, Josh Inglis, Matt Kelly, Simon Mack and David Moody, Joel Paris, Josh Philippi and Marcus Stornis. I'll tell you what, if everyone was fit, there would be heaps of pressure on in West Australian cricket. We'll ask about Berendorf and Ty. We'll find out about their progress amongst others, Hayes, after 7 when Adam Voges joins us, as he regularly will, on a Wednesday between now and the end of the cricket season.
Absolutely. Big news today, Carl, in the soccer. Tony Sage got on radio earlier today saying that he was looking at selling the Perth Glory, or a stake of the Perth Glory. Well, the London Football Exchange, the group that he was going to sell to, they've just announced that they have entered into an asset sale and purchase agreement to acquire a majority shareholding in the Perth Glory. Now, this is interesting. He's ahead of his time, Tony Sage. He's been like that in business, and he's got a different business model here. So what they're going to do, the London Football Exchange, is target 7 clubs from different countries and leagues around the world. Now, that is good for Perth Glory players, because there's a pathway that if they can progress past the Perth Glory, they can get some opportunity at other clubs, but it also helps streamline a lot of their businesses. But they are creating a token utilizing blockchain technology to allow fans to potentially own equity in these clubs. So, you know, we're talking about Bitcoin, we're talking about blockchain, where investors get the opportunity to obviously get these tokens, and if it is successful and they make a lot of money, it goes back to token holders. He is ahead of his time. There's no doubt about that, Tony Sage.
So London Football Exchange, just correct me if I'm wrong, are a UK-based cryptocurrency group.
They are.
So their expertise in that.
And they're going to buy 7 clubs. So the Perth Glory is
so
the first club.
So how does it work, mate? You know a little bit about this. I mean, you know a lot more about it than me. So do you know exactly how it could work?
Yeah, I do. I think it gives an opportunity for investors and also fans to be a part of it and get a piece of the income or the revenue generated by all of those clubs. It also gives access to the London Football Exchange the chance to make money. So we all have listings on the ASX where it's all about trying to generate money so they can go and spend that on certain things. And in this case, they might generate, you know, 100 million, 500 million, and part of that will be used to go and buy some of these clubs.
So obviously with Tony Sage, he's losing money hand over fist when it comes to the Perth Glory. Last year, the loss was 2.9 million. Now, he can't keep putting his hand in his pocket to compete against some of the other clubs who have already got overseas owners in play, and some of them are English Premier League clubs, so they are backed by billions of dollars when you have a look at some of their owners. To compete, he's got to be able to bring more revenue in.
So if he streamlines a lot of the processes and also functions of that business, whether it be marketing, it might be the accounts department as well, where you get all of those departments working across 7 clubs, all of a sudden you eliminate a lot of the costs that are involved. So it's quite genius. Look, there's still a bit to play out on the token sale and how that will work, but a lot of sports are starting to look into this, including NBA players, Formula One, and we're going to have a chat on Friday, I think it is, to a guy that knows this industry better than us and how it can impact the sports world with blockchain and cryptocurrency.
Quite simply, according to the website, the London Football Exchange, and I'm reading this straight off their website, the world's first football club stock exchange that will allow fans, traders and investors to acquire shares. It's interesting stuff. Donnie and Spearwood, g'day.
Good evening, boys. We've got a few points. But talking about that, I was looking on my phone a couple of weeks ago. Actually, it was one of the clubs from Croatia, Dinamo Zagreb. Apparently, they were looking to purchase it there as well. So there you go.
Good on you, mate.
Anyway, talking about All Stars in against Victoria and also Warner. The All Stars, I reckon they should have like at least five players, you know, from each club rather than 3. I mean, have a look at the Giants. I mean, they were quite a few that can go in there, and there's only three allowed. And Dale Warner, mate, what a lot of garbage there is. We enter him win Ellen Border medal. So we're going to promote cheats, do we? I mean, he's the main man for that cheating rubbish in South Africa, and now he's giving him an award for doing it.
So you don't deserve a second chance in life, though, Don. He did that, but then he's come back and he's performed. It's not his fault he won the award. He was voted by the media, the players, the coaches to be that. He struggled in one series, but it's not his fault. I think sometimes you've just got to let it go and move on like he
it's
has.
It's like when one of your Eagles, has. It's not like when one of your Eagles players gets suspended, Donnie. You know, you do the crime, you do the time, but once you come back, you're still allowed to get three Brownlow votes and be eligible the next season to win the Brownlow medal.
Yeah, you're saying so. I just don't think there should be a time limit on that sort of thing, what he did.
Well, why not? You know? He's done his time. He was 12 months out of the game. He's done his time. He's come back. He's proven that he's the best player in all forms of the game, and that's why he wins the award. He should be entitled to win it. He's eligible like everybody else.
Well, let me tell you, I did absolutely rubbish in England. If it wasn't for Steve Smith and the Marnus, they wouldn't win a series. I'll tell you that now.
Alan Border made some comments about that today. He thought that maybe in the future they could change the weighting to be greater for the Ashes series. But I don't like that. I think if you go that way, then you undermine some of the other teams, like India, like New Zealand. I think that's the way it is. The rules are there. Everybody knows. And clearly it's an advantage if you're good at all formats. I think Marnus Labuschagne, you know, could have won it had he played a few more of the other formats. But he got it fair and square, in my mind.
Well, the interesting part was, is I thought Pat Cummins would have been the bloke that would have pushed him to the line. It was Steve Smith. So if Donnie would have been happy if Steve Smith got an extra vote, because they would have died, wouldn't they? I was just trying to think back through all the results. And when you go back and have a look, I mean, the impact that both Smith and Warner have had across the formats of the game, the versions of cricket that they play. And look, the reason that they get a chance to win those awards probably more than most is that they do play Test, One Day, T20 cricket, and they play it to a very, very high level. So it's, I think, worthy. I would have liked to have seen Pat Cummins win it, but he won it last year, and he's had another good 12 months. And I'll tell you what, he's integral to Australian cricket. We'll clear a break. If you'd like to join us, you can. 922-118-82 is the number here on Sports Day. Want to make sure that we keep plugging the bushfire appeal game play between Frio and West Coast here at Perth Stadium. It is only $3 to get in, and you'd need to go to Ticketmaster to buy your tickets. I think that is the safest way. And just remember that the public transport, so your train or your bus ride, is included in the ticket. So please take advantage of that. If you've never been to the stadium before, and come and be part of some history, because I reckon we can get well over the 41,500 that came along to the Frio and Collingwood game. And I think there was 56,000 that won the award when it comes, won the award. 56,000 it was to the biggest game on the East Coast. So can we trump that? That'd be great. And do as much as we can for those that have been affected by those fires. As we go to Danny, who joined us in Kalamunda. Welcome, Danny.
Yeah, go guys, mate. I actually must be... I think I'll have to go to a hearing aid, because when you said that Warner won the award, I thought you were talking about Steve Warne, the bowler. I thought it was like a prodigious award, but how could he possibly have beaten any other players? I mean, the guy's nothing but a cheat. And I agree with Muzz, sorry.
Muzz?
Or Donnie.
Well, Donnie, sorry. I can't believe. And I don't think he played that well. Anyway, well, he was the leader of the ring. It wasn't Steve Smith, and it wasn't the West Australian guy, the batsman. He was the one that did it, and he put Australia in disgrace. So 1 year or 2 years later, he wins the best cricketer. I think it's disgusting. I'm sorry. I think once you're a thief, you're a thief, and once you're a crook, you're a crook.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what, Danny? The thing is that the ICC gave them a one-test suspension. It was Australian cricket that suspended them for 12 months for bringing the game into disrepute. So they weren't penalised much by the cricketing authorities. When you have a look at the history of those that have tampered with balls and using your words, cheated, then the penalties have not been that grave. This is the most significant penalty handed out by a cricketing jurisdiction around the world, and it was by our own cricket authorities. Now, he's served his 12 months out of the game, he's come back, and he's performed better than anybody in Australian cricket, so he wins the award. Isn't he entitled to win it?
Well, sorry, but 12 months, right? And, yeah. And they brought Australian sportsmen into disrepute. We've never been regarded as cheaters.
And
right?
He served his time?
12 months. Oh, okay. And the tears and the tears on the camera. Sorry, mate, I disagree with you, okay? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. You don't have to be sorry. You're entitled to your view.
You're also questioning the judges here too, which is Justin Langer, who's a man of high integrity. All of the other players, they vote on this, and certain parts of the media as well. You don't want to go into this award where you say, no, you can't give votes to Dave Warner or Steve Smith in this example. So then you look at the winner, and it wouldn't be the proper winner because two of the best players in Australian cricket wouldn't be included in the voting. Come on, Danny.
As this, Shahid Afridi in 2010, right? He's the standing Pakistani captain. He received two T20 international match ban for ball tampering. Playing Australia in 2010, he was caught on camera biting the cricket ball to adjust the seam. He was actually biting it, and he got two T20 matches. So there you go. That's just one example, Danny, and I could go on with more and more and more. But I don't have time because the 7 o'clock news is fast approaching here on 882 6BR, and then we'll be whipping around Australia to have a yak to three of the contenders for the West Australian RAC Sportswear Star of the Year. Looking forward to seeing who is going to be crowned. That Adam Voges also to join us after the 7 o'clock news, which is coming up next, and looking forward to having a chat to David Campese in the next hour. Welcome back to Sports Day, and we're going to have a chat to a few of those that are in contention to win the RAC Sports West Awards, and the big one, the Sports West Star of the Year. And it's great to have a man who is magnificent in the saddle of his bike, and I'm talking a push bike. His name is Sam Welsford, and he joins us here on Sports Day. Welcome, Sam. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. How are you? What's going on?
Yeah, well, for you, I know that you're not going to be at the event because you're over there in Adelaide. We'll ask you why you're there in a moment. But firstly, mate, on your year, the UCI Track World Championship winner in the scratch race and the team pursuit. That's not a bad way to finish 2019.
Yeah, thanks, boys. Yeah, the rookie year last year, and yeah, definitely hoping to recreate the success we had last year in obviously the Olympic 2020 year.
Was it your best year, you think, in the competition?
Well, I think so. I think we're all of us and in the team shoot team are on an upward trajectory leading into the games. So, you know, we broke our own world record last year, and I think we'll be hoping to do it the same this year.
With your other events that you contested, the Oceania Continental Track Championship, first in the Omnium and first in the Scratch Race at the National Track Championships, second in the Madison, third in the Team Pursuit, the UCI Track World Cup in Hong Kong, second in the Madison in Glasgow, second in the Madison, second in the Melbourne 6 Days event and third in the Brisbane 6 Days event. And then, of course, to start 2020, mate, already the Oceania Continental Track Championships have been held, first in the Omnium and first in the Madison. So you've finished 2019 in fine fettle and started 2020 pretty much in the same form.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy when you realise all those results and all the, you know, the past year we've had. But yeah, I've had a big focus this year in a bit of pre-season with especially with the Oceanas leading into the Road Nationals early on this year. So yeah, it's been a pretty good start to the year. So hopefully you build off that. And obviously for the games coming up.
Yeah, looking towards Tokyo, how many events will you be involved in, and what's your expectations, given you've been there once before? Is it time now to deliver the gold?
Yeah, I'm not sure what events I'll be in at the moment. I think for all of us boys, the team shoots are main focus, and then anything more than that, just a bonus for us, because that's just what our training is like. And yeah, I mean, hopefully, yeah, you know, I think going back from Rio when we ran second, it's always good to, you know, light that fuel, that fire in the belly for that win. So yeah, really keen to try and get one back, and you know, I think this time is the time we're gonna make it happen.
What about from Australian team point of view? Do you think we'll put out one of our very best ever Olympic teams?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I think the preparation and all the support staff we have going from this year, from, you know, Tokyo year to Rio year is tenfold. You know, it's so much better this year. I think you've got so much more support and backing by so many people. So even just the research and development is, you know, 10 times better than what we had in Rio. So, yeah, big things to come, I think.
You're a three-time world champion in the team pursuit. Hayes, you spoke about that silver medal in Rio de Janeiro. What is the program for now, mate? We find you in Adelaide tonight. What is the program from here?
Yeah, big year for us, obviously. We have the World Championships in about 2 weeks' time, so we're heading over to Berlin on Wednesday next week for that. So, unfortunately, I'll miss the ANZ Sport Awards, but I think it's going to be a good night anyway, and it's always a night with a room full of talented athletes.
It just shows you how many times you've been along, because it's now the RAC Sports West Awards. They've only just had a recent name change, but it's nice of you to put the old sponsor in there. It's a good job. But, mate, you've always been a star and 24 now, so you've still got plenty of years ahead. Thanks for having a quick yak to us tonight, mate, and all the best for tomorrow night.
No worries, fella. Thanks for having me. Have a good night.
Now, Sam is one of a group of big names. Madison De Rosario, Nathan Fife, who won the Brownlow Medal, of course, in the AFL. Bryce Cotton, who's been starring for our Perth Wildcats. Madison Keeney, who is in the sport of diving. Diego Castro, we've seen what he's been able to do on the soccer pitch, along with Samantha Kerr, strutting her stuff for our glory. And now for Chelsea overseas, Hannah Green on the golf course, winning her maiden championships throughout the course of 2019. Sam Hill in mountain biking, Annabelle McIntyre in the sport of rowing, Matthew Wern in the sport of sailing, Brianna Throssell in swimming, and we've just had a chat to Sammy Welsford, of course, in track cycling. As we go to our next guest, who joins us from sunny Brisbane right now, Madison Keeney. Welcome to Sports Day.
Hey, how's it going?
We're going really well, Maddie, and it's going to be great to see you in contention for the big gong, the West Australian RAC Sports Star, and looking forward to the crack field that is going to assemble. You, unfortunately, though, are not going to be there because you're in training.
Yeah, I'm currently in Brisbane at the moment. Not quite as sunny as you'd think, but I can't get back to Perth for the awards as much as I'd like to. So I think my mum's going in my place.
That's great. And it's great to see families are represented. And it's brilliant that you have been recognised in this way. 2019, you went to Guangzhou and won, or in fact you came third, you won the bronze medal in the 3 metre springboard. Just tell us about your year in general.
2019 for me was actually a very successful year. I had a really good world championships and a really successful World Series, had a couple of wins at World Series, and then they gave me a lot of confidence for World Championships, which is awesome.
Obviously, it's an Olympic year, and you, I'm sure, would be really excited with the road ahead. You've been to Olympic Games before, the 3 metre synchro back in 2016, Rio de Janeiro. Tell us about that experience.
It's unreal. It's quite hard to describe the Olympic Games. You know, I'm a lot older and more mature now, so thinking back then, I was not in over my head, but, you know, you're just taking it all in and you don't really know what's going on for your first Olympics. So now I think I'm a bit more ready and prepared for 2020.
And given that you did win the World Championships gold medal in that same event, what's improved? What have you done differently in, say, the 3 years, now going into 4 years since you made that last Olympic appearance?
I guess it's just growing with my synchro partner, I guess. Me and my partner, Annabelle Smith, are really close friends, and, you know, we've been training together for now an extra 4 years. So that's always a bonus for us. But, you know, we're just better divers, more experienced, and, you know, I know what's going on now, I think.
It's one of my favourite sports, the diving at the Olympics. I love watching it. Heading towards this year's Olympics, what sort of Australian team do we expect to put out there?
So we're still currently in the middle of qualifying our spots for the Olympics, so we can have a maximum of 2 athletes in each event. So we're still trying to do that at the World Cup, which is coming up in April. So we're looking at, you know, trying to get athletes in every event, and I think the team this year is going to be really strong, and we should be able to do that.
How many different coaches does the Australian diving team have? Do you all work under the same one, or is there different coaches spread throughout?
We've got a couple of coaches in different locations. So we've got our main sort of training centres in Sydney, Brisbane, Adelaide and Perth. So we've got one coach from there, and then each centre has assistant coaches as well that that also work with the athletes.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but were you born in Auckland in New Zealand?
I was, actually.
And so when did you get to Australia and start living your life here?
I moved over when I was 4, so still pretty young. My parents moved over to New Zealand for work, and we came back to Australia. And so I'm definitely an Australian now. Wouldn't go back.
No, but you obviously spent that time in Western Australia, because obviously you're living now in Queensland, in Brisbane, but you spent most of your time here in WA studying your stuff in the early days?
Yeah, I finished high school in WA, and then I moved to Brisbane because that's where the main training centre was based at the time. So for me, that was a strategic move in order to, take my diving to the next level when I was still young.
Yeah, well done on what you've done in 2019. Gold in the 3-metre synchro, and, of course, a bronze in the springboard. Well done, congratulations, and good luck tomorrow night.
Thank you so much.
Madison Keeney, and she is in the sport of diving, as we go to our next guest in Maddie Wern, who's just finishing sailing today. He's been involved in day 2 of the World Championships, the pairs, and he joins us here on Sports Day. Welcome, Maddie.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
How'd you go today, mate?
Yeah, pretty solid day, pair of seconds. So, take that on day 2 of the world.
Absolutely. Now, obviously for you, this is one of the stepping stones to the Olympic Games, which is what it's all about. But firstly, mate, let's recap 2019, what you've done, because tomorrow night we're going to have the West Australian RAC Sports Star of the Year Award, the Big Gong, and you have been named amongst an elite field.
Yeah, it's always an honour to be nominated, let alone be a finalist. So, super excited about that. And, obviously a bit disappointed I can't be there for the great night. But, it's pretty exciting.
Do you think you're a chance to win it, Matty? And if not, who do you think will win?
It's obviously pretty hard to tell. There's obviously some pretty diverse sports going around. But, Sam Wilson in the cycling, he's done some pretty amazing stuff over the last 12 months. So I put my name on him, I reckon.
Righto, mate. Now, for you, these World Championships, are they finished? What is ahead of you for the rest of this week? And what are your stepping stones towards Tokyo in 2020 now?
Yeah, so obviously, just finished day 2 of 6 days for us. So, we've got a last day of qualifying series tomorrow, and then we go into the final series. Still a fair bit of racing to be done there. But, obviously, first event of the year and, obviously of the Olympic year as well. So, you're always looking to get off on the right foot, I guess, in some sense.
Yeah.
But, things are going pretty well. And, things are pretty jam-packed in the first 6 months before the Games. So, hopefully it gets the ball rolling.
Have you already qualified for the Olympic Games?
Yeah, got announced. I was back in October, September, October. So, that was pretty exciting. And, obviously to come to the Worlds without that pressure of having to qualify for the Games, and, it's been great to just come and know that we can do what we need to do and, try to pick some things up that we can learn for the Games.
Can we trump London? We won 3 gold and a silver there. I think in Rio only 1 gold and 3 silver. Can we go one better this time and maybe win 4? What do you reckon?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. I know that a lot of the other classes will be looking to do that for sure. But it will definitely be a tough Games. But I'm quietly confident that Australia can do well.
Thanks for joining us, mate. Good luck tomorrow in your championships and good luck tomorrow night in the West Australian Sports Star of the Year.
Yeah, no worries. Cheers, mate. Really appreciate it.
Good stuff. Nice to have a chat to a few of our leading athletes there, and it will be a big event here at Optus Stadium tomorrow night. Stay with us. Next coming up is Adam Voges to chat about West Australian cricket back into Sheffield. Welcome back to Sports Day, Summer of Sports, Sports Update. Macca's mini games are here. Play and win every time. And I ran into Adam Voges last Friday night at the Wacker Ground when we were playing or about to play the Boundary for Bushfires charity match, and he was limping. Voges, what's wrong with you? How are you?
Good evening, guys. Unfortunately, being the wrong side of 40 now, I'm quickly learning that I can't do what I used to be able to. So, the hammy's a little bit tight at the moment.
I've seen you, though, out there warming up with the boys in the Scorchers games, down on your knees, you're whacking balls, you got the mitt on, they're whipping them back into you. You're still keeping up pretty good, though, aren't you, overall?
Trying to get a bit of exercise in every now and then. Keeps me sane. Just a little bit injured at the moment, but over in Adelaide now preparing for Shield cricket and looking forward to getting stuck into that.
Adam, as a coach and being involved in that way, and, you know, people might not get there early enough to see the warm-ups when I'm there preparing to do a broadcast that you do in all forms of the game. It's not just this form of cricket that you go out there and get engaged in that sort of stuff prior to getting involved in a contest. How important is that as a coach to be out there in that sort of environment?
Oh, yeah, obviously. Game day is obviously really important in terms of the preparation and making sure the guys get exactly what they need. And as a coach and as a coaching staff, our job's really to make sure the guys are as prepared as they possibly can be for when they walk out onto the ground. And that is certainly the days leading up. We've come over to Adelaide a couple of days earlier just to make sure we're ready to go for our Shield game. But that leads all the way up until the moment that they walk over the line and bowl that first ball. So, that's really important part of what we do and just making sure those guys are ready to go.
Starting on Friday against South Australia, the Big Bash is done and dusted. Does it take much time for the players to readjust from format to format? I know you had a couple of practice games and there was a very low score.
Yeah, we had that second 11 game last week, Hayes, and that was certainly a little bit disappointing from a results point of view. But on the other side, for the guys to get some exposure to the Duke ball that swings quite prodigiously and is certainly a different challenge to what the guys have faced during the Big Bash over the last couple of months. So that transition back into red ball cricket, back into to Shield and with the Duke ball just takes a little while. Some of the guys who were able to play in that game, I think, took a lot out of it, and I think they'll certainly be better for it. And then on the other side, you've got guys like Marcus Stoinis and Josh Phillippe who have literally flown straight from the Big Bash final over to Adelaide with us and have only a couple of days to try and transition into red ball cricket. So a few of the guys are all in different areas, but we're certainly hoping by the time the boys walk out there on Friday, they're all ready to go.
And it's been a good time for a few players to go back to grade cricket. I think that is important. And there has been some good performances of note.
Yeah, that's right. I think the Aussie selectors must have seen Darcy Short's weekend. Mm. Well, certainly his performance on Saturday, he took 8 wickets in 14 overs and then got 100 off about 80 balls. So terrific that he's been called up as Glenn Maxwell's replacement in the tour to South Africa. It's great that we've got 4 West Australians on that tour now. But, yeah, there were certainly some pleasing signs in grade cricket. Jake Carter, Cameron Bancroft got some runs as well. Liam Guthrie performed well and Josh Inglis in the second 11 game. So there's some good performances and guys will hopefully have some confidence going into Friday.
So who's not available for the Sheffield Shield game and how is Cameron Green going? Is he ready to bowl?
Not yet. He's had a scan on his back earlier this week, which is showing some really positive signs. So it's a process in now just looking to build him over the next little period and hopefully having him potentially ready to bowl at the very back end of the season. But as with these stress fractures and a young kid who's had a reoccurrence and a couple of them now, we need to make sure that we get everything right so that it doesn't happen again. So there's some positive signs there. But, we've got a good 12-man squad. It was 13 with Darcy, but he made the trip over to Adelaide yesterday and is flying back to Perth today to get ready to fly out to South Africa. But, yeah, really confident in the squad of guys that we've got together and looking forward to taking on South Australia.
What about a few of the other blokes? Saw AJ Tai and, of course, Jason Behrendorf. Jace said he's still not back into action just yet, but AJ's getting closer.
Yeah, AJ's getting there. He's probably at 80-85%, and it's just going to take a little while with that elbow in terms of just finding that last little bit. But, AJ's predominantly not going to be involved in our Shield cricket, but he's still got plenty of reasons to make sure that he's ready to go for the IPL in April. So he certainly got incentive to get that elbow right. Jason's recovering really well from back surgery, and come the start of next summer, we're certainly hopeful that he'll be available for WA and the Scorchers in all forms of the game. So they're progressing slowly but surely, and but yeah, with the likes of David Moody, Liam Guthrie, Matt Kelly, Joel Parris and Simon McInerney, we think we've got a pretty strong, probably four of those five guys will play in Adelaide, and we're looking forward to seeing them those guys get to work.
I just have to look back at Friday. AJ's elbow looked all right when he was out there batting anyway. he smacked a couple over the fence off Mitch Johnson, so that created a bit of rivalry out there.
It might be the best thing for his batting, actually, an elbow injury, but he might actually be able to technically get a little bit more correct. But he's always been a pretty big fan of his batting, AJ's. But he's done a little bit of work on it, which has been good to see.
Mate, where do you sit on front foot no ball technology? They're going to introduce it into the Women's T20 World Cup for the first time in a major competition. Would you like to see him extend that into the men's game and keep it there for good or not?
Yeah, I think so. I guess the obvious one was I had a huge slice of luck in New Zealand in Test cricket and got bowled off a no ball that wasn't actually a no ball. So things could have looked very, very different. But I think with all the things that the umpires have to worry about at the striker's end, to not have to worry about whether the bowler's bowling a front foot no ball or not, I think allows them to really focus on the business end, and hopefully that will help them get more decisions right, which all anyone really wants is for the umpires to make the right call. So if this can help them in a small little way, then I'm certainly for it.
Oh, you could have retired with an average of 100, Bogey, if they didn't get that one wrong. You were that good. Now, I want to ask about Nathan Coulter-Nye. What's he up to? Because it's a bit of a difficult position because he's chosen not to play Sheffield Shield and he's not a part of the Perth Scorchers. It means he's only available from one format point of view. Does that make it hard, not only for him, but for others that choose to go that way to maintain a spot on the list?
Yeah, it is. Nathan's really interesting one. Obviously, he's made the call that that longer form cricket is no longer a priority for him. He's certainly focusing more on 50 over and T20 cricket. So, when we get to this time of the season, it means that Nathan doesn't really have a role to play for Western Australia. Having said that, he's actually over in Adelaide at the moment visiting his daughter and came to our training session today and was really proactive in helping our bowlers and throwing a few balls to our batters and wants to continue to be involved in WA cricket, which is great. He'll continue to do his white ball skills probably away from our group and make sure that he's cherry ripe. He's got a pretty lucrative IPL contract he'll be available for in April. So, moving forward, we'll sit down with Nathan at the end of the summer and just see what his priorities are and where ours sit. I've always had a philosophy that I want to build a state list that can win a Sheffield Shield, and I'll stick by that. And if Nathan still wants to make himself available for 50 over cricket, then we'll certainly entertain that. He was excellent for us in the Marsh Cup this year. So, few decisions to make at the back end of the summer, but he'll certainly be in and around and hopefully helping a few of our young bowlers out.
How many players did you have in the Under-19s World Cup, and how good was it to see Bangladesh actually beat India in the final for world cricket? That was significant.
Yeah, it was. There was a bit of controversy there from what I saw, but it was interesting scenes at the back end of that final. I think it's brilliant that a nation like Bangladesh can win an Under-19s World Cup. Obviously, still developing in terms of Test cricket and international cricket, but terrific to see that they've obviously got a pathway and the talent there to compete at that level. It was terrific to see a couple of the WA boys, Sam Fanning, who was the leading run scorer for Australia during the tournament, who we rookie contracted this year. Terrific to see him do really well batting at the top of the order. And young Cooper Connolly, who got an opportunity, he captained
Western Australia's under-17s team this year, who were victorious in winning that national championship. And to see him get an opportunity as a 17-year-old, I think they're certainly looking at him to lead the next under-19s World Cup in 2 years' time. So for him to get that exposure and that experience is terrific, and nice to see that there's some good young kids coming through.
Brilliant, mate. Thank you very much for your time. Take care, and we'll have a chat to you next week.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Adam Voges there. Macca's mini games are here. Play and win daily four food prizes only on the My Macca's app. Stay with us. David Campese will join us next here. Welcome back to Sports Day, and it's nice to have David Campese on our program. A man that I grew up watching from Queanbeyan in New South Wales is where he is originally from, but represented Australia many, many times. In fact, 101 appearances, 315 points. And I think many of you would be in the same boat as me as we welcome him to Sports Day. Welcome, mate. How are you?
Yeah, mate, not too bad. Getting there slowly.
How's the body these days, given what you put it through in all of those matches that I've just mentioned briefly to kick us off tonight?
Oh, well, mate, it was quite good. Being a winger, I didn't really do much. So I stood out there and watched.
No, you didn't.
Mate, the score tries, mate. They give me the ball and I just run over the line. So it was pretty easy job.
So good at doing it and so successful. And with your game under a fair bit of pressure, I mean, obviously it was only a week ago that the broadcast deal with Fox had ended and we were all wondering where's it going to go. And then the next minute it came out with an announcement about yourself assisting with game development, introduction and development of new and exciting and existing participants in the game of rugby union. What does this mean for you?
Yeah, look, it was a great opportunity. I've been, obviously, in Australia for the last 2 years. I've been coaching around the country. I've been to Perth a few times. I've been up to Rocky. I've been up to the Sunshine Coast. I've been everywhere. So, look, it was great to be offered a job at Rugby Australia. Yes, it's probably not the best times, but, I mean, we've got to look forward, look to the future. And, obviously, my role is going to be try to help to get the World Cup in 2027. And obviously also look around and try and help the game at grassroots and just pass on a bit of knowledge that we've sort of collected over the years and just put the guys on the right track.
Already I like what you're doing. I loved your comments. You believe that the instinct is being taken a bit out of rugby. It needs to be more exciting for fans. And the rugby scrums, it's been a bugbear of mine. When you played, you think they only went for 11 seconds, but nowadays they go for 3 minutes.
Yeah, mate, why would you be a forward, really? I mean, the referee controls the game. In the old days, the two packs got together, put the heads down, and the ball went in and came out. Look, I think that's one part of the game that we've got to really try and change. But in Australia, for some reason, we've been watching and waiting for everyone else in the world to change the game plan than we change. If you look at the Kiwis, the way they play is the way we used to play. So why should we wait? We've got into a bit of a rut over the last 10 years. I don't think there's been too much knowledge being put back into the younger players. If you look at rugby league or Aussie rules, you know, if you're a star, you retire, that bring you back into the fold to pass on your knowledge. In rugby, for years and years, obviously that's, you know, hasn't really happened. But now I think we're starting to get back involved, working with the Classic Wallabies, which is a fantastic bunch of guys, the Rugby Foundation, and we'll be getting out and about and promoting the game and obviously just trying to get these kids to understand that the game of rugby is a great game. You can go out there and try things and you won't get in trouble for it. So it's a bit different watching the seniors, but you know, we've got to start with the youngsters, and that's what the plan is.
David, there was a lot of bitter people out west when we lost the Western Force franchise from the Super Rugby competition, and so in came Twiggy Forrest and set up Global Rapid Rugby, which is about to kick off in 2020. How are we going to get the Perth public, I suppose, back on side and maybe feel included in a national competition, which essentially, I think, for rugby to grow in this country is what has to happen?
Yeah, look, it's hard because I remember in 96 we came over to Perth for New South Wales on our way to South Africa for the Super Rugby and we played the Perth team. And then I remember I was in Perth for the announcement of the Force, the Western Force that was into the Super Rugby competition. And I was at the dinner with John Mitchell in Mulvihill. And I got up and I said, this is absolutely fantastic for Australian rugby. You know, we've got another group of guys coming through. And also these experienced players will probably hang around after the competition, play in Perth, show the young guys the way forward. But they said, no, they won't. I said, what do you mean? Well, all those players will go back to Queensland, New South Wales. I said, well, how are these young guys going to learn if they're playing good rugby or not if they can't look up to a senior player? So I think that we didn't really, whoever did back there, didn't really look at that and say, guys, you come to Perth, you stay in Perth to promote the game and get the young kids coming through because they need the knowledge. So that happened right back then. You know, rugby's a great sport, and Twiggy's tried very hard. You know, he's got this competition going. We saw the Bledisloe Cup there last year in Perth, and we saw a fantastic crowd. So, you know, rugby's still alive. And I think what we need to do, especially Perth, they need to entertain people. They need to go out there and play a style of rugby that no one else is playing. And if you can do that, people will keep on coming. You know, I always believe when I played, we were entertainers. Yes, we used to win, which is fantastic. But every week people say, geez, what are these guys going to do next week? We've got to go and watch. And I think that we are probably missing the X factor a bit. And I think that this generation now have got to come out and start just going back to the simple basics of the game, being confident, and when the opportunity is to go for broke. And I think if we can do that, I think rugby is got a great opportunity to go back to where we used to be.
Is Dave Rennie the right bloke to take us back to the promised land?
I don't know. I know Dave Rennie, and he's been very successful. If you look around in Australia, we really haven't got that many Aussie coaches. I suppose that's another thing that they'll be working very hard on, trying to get some young coaches coming through the system. So in 4 or 5 years, we've got, you know, all Australian Super Rugby coaches, Wallaby coaches. And I think we learn, you know, sometimes you've got to go backwards to go forward. And I think this is a great opportunity. So Dave Rennie is going to have a lot of pressure on him. But I think that the young guys and the team, if they respond to the style of rugby, he was at the Chiefs for many, many years and they played great rugby. He wants to play that running style. So I just hope that we've got the talents that really, really want to embrace that and the supporters can come and enjoy it.
We're speaking to Aussie rugby union legend in David Campese. Cambo, what about the Australian Rugby Foundation's Indigenous rugby campaigns and the Lloyd McDermott Rugby Development Program? Can you tell us a bit about them?
Yeah, look, it's a program that's been going for a couple of years now, and obviously I think in Aussie Rules Rugby League there's a lot more Indigenous players playing instead of rugby. That we don't know why. We've got the Ellers. We've got Dubbo in a couple of weeks with the Ellers Sevens. So there's a lot of work being done into that. And if you have a look, we've had the Ellers. We've had Andrew Walker, Lloyd Walker. And we've had Brendan Williams, who played Sevens for Australia. So we've always had. We've got Long Bottom now. So we've got one or two, but there's so much talent out there that we've really got to go and search. And I think that's part of the rugby all-inclusive at the moment, is to go out there and attract anyone who wants to play the sports, you know. And I keep on harping on this. Rugby, besides football, is the only rugby code in Australia that can go to the Commonwealth Games and Olympic Games. Aussie Rules will never go there, or even the Rugby League. So we've got a couple of great avenues for kids to travel the world, play in these great tournaments, and we've just got to really encourage that. And the Indigenous part as well is, who knows who you're going to find? And I think that's the important thing, is the more work you put in, the more you're going to get out of it.
Thank you, mate. Nice to chat to you. Obviously, you had Commonwealth Games experience back at KL. I think you won a bronze medal, didn't you, back in 1998?
Yeah, when first time we were there. So it was a great opportunity to feel the buzz of the crowd, the atmosphere.
Yeah. Now, I can hear the excitement in your voice. Obviously, you are going into this with a very, very, sounds like strong motivation.
Yeah, look, you know, I've been back in Australia for 2 years, as I mentioned. I've been in South Africa for 10 years, and I wanted to help Australian rugby. So I started off coaching juniors, and then last year I realised sometimes you can't help from the bottom. You've got to go at the top. Went for Waratahs job, got knocked back on that. But I'm probably more enthusiastic about the game now because I can see the potential. I've been there, I've done that, and I know what a great sport it is, and I just think we need to encourage these kids you know, you've got the sevens as well. I mean, what a great way to see the world. You know, there's no better way than seeing the world playing sport and something you love doing. And even though I retired, I still love doing what I do. What I love to do is being involved with rugby.
Thanks for your time tonight, David.
You're welcome, guys. Thanks for your time.
David Campese, Campo, that is his nickname, and I'm sure that many of you would have been thoroughly entertained from what that man was able to do out on the field. It was a pleasure watching him play. We'll be back with more of Sports Day after this. Our number is 922-11882 if you'd like to join. Welcome back to Sports Day, and we have been focusing in on our Olympic athletes or potential Olympic athletes that have been strutting their stuff for Australian made. Shop for authentic Aussie products. Choose Australian made. And one of those young ladies is Lee Godfrey, and she plays the sport of softball. And I'm happy to report that we have qualified, and we're about to find out how, why, and when, and what is going to happen from here up until Tokyo in 2020. Lee, welcome. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
We're going really well. Now, you've been vice captain of the Australian team since 2012. That's a long time. You haven't been able to get the captain injured, or have you been able to lead the side a couple of times?
No. Stacey Porter's still our captain, so she's one of Australia's best ever players, so I don't think that mantle's going anywhere anytime soon.
And how exciting is it for you and the team right now? The Olympics back in as a sport since 2008 was the last time. Why did it go and why has it come back?
Yeah, I don't really know why it went, but no, it's back because obviously Japan has a big baseball softball background. So it got voted back in pretty much straight away when they were guaranteed the Olympics. So fingers crossed Australia can do what we've done previously and medal at the next one.
And do you feel going forward, if it's successful, they'll continue on with softball being a part of the Olympic Games?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not in the following one, which is Paris, but then it should be in the next one, which is hosted by America. So fingers crossed Australia qualifies for that one as well after Japan.
That is a little bit frustrating, but what about the team? Do you think you're a real chance to go over there and get gold? Because in the recent tournament, taking on four of the teams you'll be competing against, you finished second.
Yeah, we did. We had a really good week in Sydney. We played really well and lost to Japan, unfortunately, in the final. But I think we're a really good chance of a medal and hopefully a gold medal in Japan. So that's the goal for the team. And I think anything short of that would be pretty disappointing. So, yeah, looking forward to it. It should be a big couple of months. But at the end of it, hopefully we've got a medal around our necks.
And on the international scale, which countries are the top in the sport of softball?
Yeah, so Japan's definitely up there. They won the last gold medal, but America's good as well. But with only six teams qualifying, they're all very good nations. So it's definitely going to be a tough week at the Olympics. But Japan and the US are probably the two teams to beat to sort of get yourself that gold medal.
Lee, tell us about your background. Where have you grown up? Where did you start your career? And just tell us how it's evolved from when you were a youngster.
Yeah, so I'm from Perth, obviously, and I played at my local club, which was Fremantle Rebels. So I got into it because my whole family played. And then from there, obviously, I made state teams and got into WAIS, which is the West Australian Institute of Sport. And then I've played ever since, so I'm a little bit older now than I was back then. But yeah, it's been good, and obviously at the moment, WAIS is supporting us really well, so... yeah, it should be an exciting time. It should be an exciting time in my career for the next 6 months at least anyway.
Yeah, and look, obviously going to World Champs in 12 and 14 and other parts of the world to play your sport. Where's it taken you in your life so far?
Oh, I've been really lucky. It's taken me pretty much to most spots of the globe. So I went to college in America. I played in Holland professionally over in Europe. And then I've been to places like Japan, Venezuela, America, Canada. Yeah, so sort of a little bit of everywhere. I'm really lucky that softball's an international sport and I've sort of got to cross the globe playing the sport I love. So I've been super lucky in my career.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, it's a pretty much low-profile sport in this country. I think you'd probably agree with that. How do athletes like yourself make ends meet that, say, probably aren't lucky enough to be in a WAIS program where you do get some financial assistance or at least a lot of assistance anyway?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. I think a lot of Olympic sports don't necessarily have the financial backing. So most of the girls, particularly in our squad, work or are at school. So I mean, again, I'm super lucky that, that Wace is so supportive of me and I get to train there pretty much as a full-time athlete. But the Australian government obviously supports us as well financially. But it's one of those things that I think most Olympic sports are semi-professional. So a lot of athletes have to work, and that's just sort of what it is, unfortunately. But yeah, really exciting opportunity. So I don't think anyone would complain if they get to go to the Olympics at the end of it.
Absolutely not. And who are some of the big names we should be keeping an eye on besides yourself heading towards Tokyo?
Yeah, well, we've actually got another WA girl in the squad of 20. So Leah Parry, who I've been playing my whole career with. So she's hopefully going to gain selection as well with myself. And then, as I said, Stacey Porter, who's arguably the best softball player that's ever played in Australia, who's our current captain, is probably the other one, and Kai Parnaby, who's one of our main pitchers that I've been lucky enough to play my whole career with. So there are a few of the mainstays, I guess, but yeah, you can't really go past Stacey Porter, who's, as I said, one of Australia's best ever softball players ever.
You've mentioned a couple of times that you still need to be selected to make this team. What happens from here? Yep. Is there a competition where it is going to be chosen on form and players could miss or get in based on how they go?
Yeah, yep. So we actually have a training camp in March, so that's the first step of sort of our preparation. And then from there, we train in our home states and we head off to the States in May. So we actually play in a professional organisation over in America. So we head over there roughly about mid-May, I think it is. And then from there, we have 4 or 5 weeks before the final team selected. So we get over there and play a whole bunch of games and train over there. So that'll probably be the most critical time of the selection period, I would say. And then from there, we go into the Japan training camp and then on to the Olympics. So there's only 15 out of the 20 that'll get to go, but that's sort of high-end sport, I think. That's just what it is. Mm. But it should be really fun and really lucky opportunity to go across to America.
Brilliant. Well, it sounds fantastic, and I envy you. I think there's a lot of people that would be tuned in right now that would envy you, given where you've been and what you've done in your sport. Well done, and good luck.
Thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate it.
Good on you. Lee Godfrey there, and the sport of softball into the Olympic Games in Tokyo for 2020. And let's hope that Lee is representing Australia. That's what we want to see. Shop for the authentic Aussie products. The Australian-made Kangaroo certification is the logo that nations trust. We'll come back and wrap up the show next here on Sport. Tomorrow night here on Sports Day, John Worsfold, the Essendon coach, Matthew Nix, the Adelaide coach, will join us. We'll get into fishing and camping with Mark Lacroix, and our real value local hero is Rochelle Hawkes. We'll have a yak about her career and what a sensational career it was. Coming up next is the 8 o'clock news, and after the news, it'll be Chris Ilsley with Perth Tonight. And, of course, Chris's number is the same of ours, 922 11 882. We'll see you tomorrow from 6.